Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So this morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, fifth canto, chapter 17, entitled The Descent of the River Ganges, text 21. Yam ahur yasya stiti janma samyamam tribir vinam yam anantam rishaya naveda siddhartham eva kvachit stitam Bhumandalam Murdha Sahasra Dhamashu Yam Ahur Asya Stiti Janma Samyamam Yam Ahur Asya Stiti Janma Samyamam Tribir vinam vihinam yamanantam rishayam. Tribir vihinam yamananta rishayam. Na veda siddhartham iva kvachit stitam. Na veda siddhartham iva kvachit stitam. Bhumandalam. Murda sahasradamashu Bhumandalam Murda sahasradamashu Yamahurasya stiti janma samyamam Tribir vihinam yamanantam rishayam Navedasi dartamiva kvachit stitam Bhumandalam Murda Sahasradamasu Yamahurasya Stiti Janma Samyamam Tribir Vihinam Yamanantam Rishayam Naveda Siddhartam Ivakvachit Stitam Bhumandalam Murda Sahasradamasu Mataji.
Yeah.
Okay. Yam hum ahu, they said, asya, of the material world, stiti, the maintenance, janma, creation, samyamam, annihilation, tribhi, these three, vihinam, without, yam, which, anantam, unlimited, rishaya, all the great sages, na, not, veda, fills, siddhartam, a mustard seed, eva, like, klachit, where, stitam, situated, bhumandalam, the universe, murda sahasra dhamasu, on the hundreds and thousands of hoods of the Lord. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Lord Shiva continued, all the great sages accept the Lord as the source of creation, maintenance and destruction. Although He actually has nothing to do with these activities, therefore the Lord is called unlimited. Although the Lord, in His incarnation as Shesha, holds all the universes on His hoods, each universe feels no heavier than a mustard seed to Him. Therefore, what person desiring perfection will not worship the Lord? Purport. The incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Shesha or Ananta, has unlimited strength, fame, wealth, knowledge, beauty, and renunciation. As described in this verse, Ananta's strength is so great that the innumerable universes rest on His hoods. He has the bodily features of a snake with thousands of hoods. And since His strength is unlimited, all the universes resting on His hoods feel no heavier than the mustard seeds. We can just imagine how insignificant a mustard seed is on the hood of a serpent. In this connection, the reader is referred to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, chapter 5, verses 117 to 125. There it is stated that Lord Vishnu's incarnation as the serpentine Alanta Shesha Naga supports all the universes on His hoods. By our calculation, a universe may be very, very heavy, but because the Lord is Ananta, unlimited, He feels the weight to be no heavier than a mustard seed. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Giranjana Shalakya Chakshurun Militam Yenatas Maishri Gurave Namaha Namo Vishnu Praya Krishna Vishta Uttale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namini Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gurumani Pracharni Nivishya Shashunyavadi Paschati Adeshtarini Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shyadvaita Gadadara Shyosadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The Lord Shiva continued, all the great sages accept the Lord as the source of creation, maintenance and destruction. Although He actually has nothing to do with His activities, therefore the Lord is called unlimited. Although the Lord in His incarnation as Shesha holds all the universes on His hoods, each universe feels no heavier than a mustard seed to Him. Therefore, what person desiring perfection will not worship the Lord? So here we have a continuation of Lord Shiva's glorification and praises of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is very interesting that Lord Shiva is offering prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in which form? In which form he is addressing the Lord as? As Ananta Shesha, yes. So what is the significance of addressing the Lord as Ananta Shesha? Because here in this particular universe, we may, you know, various, as it is stated, various sages accept the Lord as the source of creation, maintenance, and destruction. But the significance of the Ananta Shesha incarnation in particular is that He has such a prominent role of practically holding the whole universe on its hood and just maintaining it. And it's not, in one sense, you may compare this, like sometimes we see still in Rajasthan, Gujarat villages. Sometimes those ladies carry heavy pots. Sometimes you'll find one, two, three, sometimes even four. You know, they balance their pots on the top of the head. And sometimes even without that, sometimes they put like some kind of cloth and stuff. Sometimes even without it. They're so expert. And they can, even while they're doing this, you know, they can do something else as well. I don't know, take care of the child or something, you know, like, or maybe whatever. Or sometimes usually you see them walking, going somewhere, carrying all these things. So they're balancing perfectly. It's amazing how they're achieved, how they, by such a long practice, they achieved the siddhi of balancing all these spots on their head. And they're not disturbed by anything else. So they're so focused. And it doesn't represent, and it doesn't, you know, it's not creating any kind of disturbance or inconvenience. But still, even compared to that, you know, the mustard seed example has been given here. What is the difficulty of holding the mustard seed on the head? So there is no any difficulty whatsoever because it's so insignificant. And especially for the Ananta Shesha, who is so unlimited, who is so great, who is so so huge. Jai Shishirada, Rasbihari Ki Jai. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Ananta Shesha, it gives us that particular idea of that unlimited power, of that unlimited opulence that Srila Prabhupada is also mentioning here in the purport itself. The six opulences, Aishvaryasa, Samagrasya, Vishasya, Yashasya, Shriya. That all these different opulences are present then within the Lord, and there, that particular opulence of the strength, that particular opulence of power, is manifested within the Ananta Shesha himself. And the Ananta Shesha is therefore embodiment of that particular opulence of the power. Of course, he's possessing all of them. But in particular, as we said here, Lord Shiva is addressing the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Ananta Shesha. One very interesting thing maybe to be noted is that Ananta Shesha, you will find sometimes in the Bhagavatam itself that Ananta and Shesha are referred as different persons. So what does Shesha mean? What does Ananta mean? So Ananta Shesha, that means that Shesha which holds the universe in particular is called Ananta, that particular incarnation. But as a Shesha, even at that point it can be called Ananta Shesha. But in a particular different kind of incarnation, when the Lord Vishnu reclines on his bed, that is mostly referred as Shesha Naga. So there is a slight difference. Although both can be applied. So that feature of Ananta Shesha is there present in all different kinds of descriptions, mostly related to the Ananta Shesha holding the universe. Now my question is, does anybody know how Ananta Shesha holds the universe? Little brainstorming. How does he hold? You know, we hear Ananta Shesha holds unlimited universes. So what is your conception? What is the picture? What is the vision you're getting of that Ananta Shesha? How is he holding the universes? Just want to see if that's correct, because I've been a little bit meditating now, and it... Yeah, he's old, but what does he hold? What is he holding on these heads? Huh? One universe. But it said on unlimited heads he holds unlimited universes. What does that mean? On each head he holds one universe. Okay, any other thoughts? Ram Kripa Prabhu, huh? Mahavishnu, what? Then can you speak a little louder, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Okay, he said in each universe he expands and is sitting on Kunma holding the planetary systems. Any other thoughts? Okay, so who is for the first one? Ananta Shesha holds on his unlimited heads unlimited universes. Hands up. Who is for the first one? Okay, few of you. Who is for the second one? Hey, wait a second. You said second one. What is this now? Okay, for the second one, second conception, that Ananta Shesha expands into each and every universe and therefore holds all the planetary systems on his hoods. Who's for the second one? One, two, three. I'm waiting. That means I'm giving you a little more chance to opt for the second one. It's the second one. It's the second option that's correct. Because the first one, it might be misleading according to description that we have the conception. Where is Ananta Shesha? Karana Dakshay Vishnu is lying down there. Or maybe that's Garbha Dakshay Vishnu. Sorry, that's Garbha Dakshay Vishnu. But similarly, Karana Dakshay Vishnu is lying there. Ananta Shesha is reclining. It's serving at his bed. And universes are emanated from the pores of his body. They're just floating everywhere. So where is Ananta Shesha? They're holding universes on his heads. It's not there. So description may be a little bit misleading in that sense if you don't enter a little deeper into understanding what's going on here. So Ananta Shesha holds unlimited universes on his unlimited heads. Yes, how? He expands into each and every universe. And he serves in such a way that he holds all the planetary systems on his hoods. So it doesn't mean that all the planetary systems are like, you know, you can put each planet like a mustard seed, it's given an example here, you know, and put on each and every one of his hoods. It's not like that also. When you study a little bit cosmology, you understand that the whole planetary systems are arranged into different regions, and they're all resting, basically, they're all connected. And there is, of course, there are some other incarnations of the Lord, like imaginary Shishumar, which also holds the pole star, which is connected to all the other revolving planets. But that comes upper, a little bit in the upper part of the universe, universal geography. But the part which rests on the Ananta Shesha's hoods is the Bhumandala. And Bhumandala, we know, it's like a plain disk, plain flat earth, which consists, and that's that Bhu region, Bhu Bhuvar Sva. So Bhu region, Bhu Mandala, it's a huge flat disk which extends to 4 billion miles throughout the whole diameter of the universe, and it contains within itself all the lower seven planetary systems like Atala, Patala, Sutala, Talatala, Rasatala, Vitala, all the other lower subterranean planetary systems, which are not planets again, they're caves. They're cave-like. They're extending for 10,000 yojanas in width and breadth and height. So they're cave-like, and they're within the Bhumandala. And still, you know, when you look, maybe if you would have some kind of a side view of the universe itself, it still looks like a very flat disk, or maybe like a chapati. Maybe more upcoming, you know, meditation. It's like, maybe it would be just like that. Just like very thin, circular object. And this is that description, this is that universe actually that Ananta Shesha is holding on his hoods, many hoods. So he's not holding planetary systems, but his many hoods are balancing that whole Bhumandala region with all the lower planetary systems. And then of course on the side that come the hellish planetary systems that's down on that lower region where Ananta Shesha is holding. So he expands, that's his another expansion, as that Ananta, in particular Ananta Shesha, which is resting on the Kurma, which is another expansion in the Garbhodaka ocean, which almost practically fills the universe till half. And then Ananta Shesha is resting on the Kurma itself, and then holding and balancing the whole Bhumandala. And on the Bhumandala, of course, all the other planetary systems are present above. So this is the conception that actually, this is the Ananta Shesha that we can understand that holds practically in each and every universe, this is his expansion. But there is a story how it came for Ananta Shesha to hold those particular universes. As a story explained, given in the Mahabharata, that is a very famous story. So I think it will be something new. There was a rivalry between Kadru and Vinata, and they were both daughters of Daksha as well as many others. But Kadru was a little more envious because Vinata gave the birth to Garuda earlier than the Kadru gave birth to thousands and thousands of other snakes. So I will cut the story short, you know all the story basically. So then they were betting that horse, Uchaishrava, what kind of tail he has. And Kadru said it's black, Vinata said it's white because it was white, but then Kadru ordered his sons to cover the with their black bodies, cover the tail of the horse so that it appears black. And many of them refused, and they were cursed by Kadru. And some of those cursed, of course, curse was later alleviated by particular action of the Vasuki and other prominent snakes. Some of those snakes who were cursed, they perished in the fire sacrifice of Janamejaya, was the son of the Parikshit Maharaj and the emperor of this planet after the Parikshit Maharaj. And he was very much disturbed by seeing and witnessing his father being bit by Takshaka. So he cursed all the snakes and arranged for such a great elaborate sacrifice at Takshila, which is nowadays in Pakistan, has also famous university. So at that particular place he arranged for that enormous sacrifice when he invited all the snakes. And it was funny description to hear that even when Indra was very great friend with Takshaka, and when Takshaka was falling to that great sacrifice to be consumed by the flames of the fire, Indra caught hold of him and he didn't allow Takshaka to fall down. But the power of the Brahmanas and the mantras was so strong that Indra was also pulled down to be consumed along with Takshaka. Of course, later on by the provincial one, Astika, I don't want to get too much into the story now, but Astika was the son of one sage whose wife was the sister of Vasuki. And he was the one predicted, he was the one kind of professed to be the person who will stop that particular sacrifice, so that not all the snakes will be sacrificed and perish. So those who were good snakes, they were not perished, they still remained alive. So during that particular pastime, then it is described how Vinata had those two sons, Aruna and Garuda, who were very powerful. Kachapa gave Vinata blessings that they will be so powerful. And of course there will be only two sons, and Kadru had so many unlimited sons, so many unlimited snakes. And first of them, first that was born out of Kadru, so this is how Shesha appeared. It was Ananta Shesha. So Shesha was the first son of Kadru, and he appeared out of Kadru. And Shesha was not so inclined actually towards association with all the other snakes, because they were so envious and jealous, especially of Garuda and Aruna. So therefore what he did, as soon as he appeared, maybe almost practically like Shukadeva Goswami, he left to Badri, he went to Gokarna, he went to forest of Pushkar and lower Himalayas. So all of these places he was performing severe penances in a form of ascetic. He could assume any form. So he was performing different kinds of austerities, very severe austerities. And then he pleased Lord Brahma. And then Lord Brahma appeared to him and he asked him, what is the boon that you desire? What can you grant you? What can I grant to you? And then Ananta Shesha explained, he expressed his desire to achieve all the virtues and all the good qualities. And Lord Brahma very easily granted him. But then Lord Brahma at that particular point also requested him one thing, that please, why don't you assume the position of the holder of this universe? So therefore universe was already existing, but Lord Brahma said that it's not so much balanced. So why don't you assume the position of the holder of the universe? And because you have unlimited strength, you are unlimited, unlimitedly great in all the opulences as we hear here, Prabhupada is describing in the purport. So why don't you assume that particular position? You will be able to hold the whole universe on your hood, and therefore balancing it properly, that it doesn't get, you know, like when Hiranyaksha came and knocked it off, the whole Bhumandala. It wasn't the earth, it was Bhumandala. It wasn't our planet, it was the whole Bhumandala that knocked it off down into the ocean. So why don't you please hold the whole that planetary Bhu system and all the others above on your hoods, and therefore balancing it. There are also elephants there on the Bhumandala itself in four cardinal directions that are balancing Bhumandala itself. So it's all very nicely arranged. So this whole universe is now very stable. There's no fear of any earthquake that can come and then disbalance the whole wonderful arrangement and proportions of that universe itself. So Ananta Shesha is taking care. So this is how Ananta Shesha got the boon, the blessing from Lord Brahma, and also with that particular request that he holds that Bhumandala in each and every universe. That's the case now. He holds the whole planetary systems on his hoods. And that is the function of Ananta Shesha. That is the function of Ananta, because we know it's expansion of Balaram. Sankarshan, Mahasankarshan, Karanadakashaya Vishnu, all the others, Garbhodakashaya Vishnu, Kshirodakashaya Vishnu, and finally Shesha. This is a particular expansion of Lord Balaram. And we know that Lord Balaram, his service is always service towards Lord Krishna, or his position. That's what he is meant for. He's not different than Krishna himself, but he expands, Krishna expands in order to, again, assuming form of a Balaram to assist Krishna as a paraphernalia, as all different kinds of various requirements that are needed that will enhance the pastimes of Krishna. And we know during even Krishna Lila, Balaram assumes a little bit different position, but he never contradicts Krishna to the extent that he will claim his particular vision of a particular situation to be the utmost. No, he always goes along with whatever Krishna's desire is. He always just expands in order to facilitate different kinds of pastimes of Lord Krishna. So this is Balaram, this is Ananta Shesha. This is mostly what we find, what we understand from the scripture is given about Lord Balaram. So he gives protection. He also expands. He prepares things for Krishna. Like before Krishna took birth, before Krishna appeared, Balaram also appeared. But then Sankarshan, he also took that, there is that another name. He was pulled from the mind of Devaki, to the womb of Mother Rohini. Was pulled. Pulling. Sankarshan. Karshan means Karshati. Pulling. So this is how Balaram appeared. And he prepared the place for Krishna to appear. This is why he appeared first. So this is the function of Balaram. And then again he expanded. Like there is that nice... it's not picture, what is that? Relief? How do you call this? Diorama kind of stuff. Where Vasudev is holding Krishna. And in the night when there was such a huge waves and storms, when they crossed Yamuna, you know, the Yamuna was parted, and then Ananta Shesha, he serves as a protector. He protects, like an umbrella. So this is the function of Balaram. He's always assisting Krishna in whichever pastime, whichever lila there might be. So another interesting thing is, maybe I'll just give you a little cross-cultural understanding, world cross-cultural understanding about these different kinds of ideas of about the snake. Usually when we, like, how come Lord expands at the snake? At something that maybe somebody might be a little uneasy about. You know, like also Nrsimhadev, and both Nrsimhadev and the snake. Somebody sees this, I mean, somebody may faint thinking, you know, what kind of God is this? How can God be in the most... Because the connotation of the snake, especially in the Western world, is very, very negative. Anything related to the snake, you know, it's like very negative. So then how come Lord, like here we are hearing, and Lord Shiva is glorifying so much Ananta Shesha, how could Lord assume such kind of a form that is actually very, very unattractive for those in the mode of goodness? For those in the mode of ignorance, it's very attractive. That's a different thing. And some people even worship them and do all kinds of things with them. But in general, it's very unattractive. And they are usually personified, and they're embodiment of envy. And pretty many, very many bad qualities as well. So how come Lord could assume such a form? So what kind of form, somebody may wonder, that is? Huh? Kinema, what kind of form is this? How can Lord assume the form of a snake? We know that Krishna can actually expand. There's one lecture Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj gave. He said, there's a description somewhere, that Krishna expanded even as a mosquito. It's an incarnation of Krishna as a mosquito. There's no wonder. What's so wondrous about it? Krishna can expand in all. There are 84 lakh species of life. So Krishna actually expands in each and every form. And that kind of form is the most wonderful form, the most attractive form. And maybe just to defy the whole conceptions of empiricists, you know, that, you know, how can God be? God can be whatever God wants to be. Why not like this also? But in that form, He's the most worshipable, He's the most attractive, He's the most pleasing, He's the most beautiful, everything, the most. It's not a conception what we have of this material world. You know, but a snake, especially, you know, like I said, in the West, people are relating it to something very evil, very, very negative. You know, then how can God be with a snake? Then immediately they will say, this is some devil worship going on. Because they have no idea. That's the problem. I have no idea what that means. So God can assume any form, and that form is the most pleasing, the most beautiful, the most attractive, the filled with all the opulences. Because it is a fact. Sometimes I had several close encounters with some cobras. They are terrifying. You know, you just look at their eyes and they're like, oh, you know, like they freeze you practically. They paralyze you with their evil look. If you look at their eyes, it's like so evil, so cold, so much filled with envy. Really, at one point, I remember in one instance, I was like practically paralyzed. Don't look at their eyes, you know, they're so disgusting actually, really. So that's our material experience. Yes, but Krishna is not like that. When he assumes form of an antashesha, he's the most beautiful, the most attractive. That's the whole different thing. That's what I'm saying, that our conception, it doesn't apply to Krishna in this particular sense. Like that idea, you know, why Krishna is black, for example, or something. Usually black is not considered to be something attractive. Because that's the whole point. It is, so in order to defy our material conception of it. That he can be the most beautiful, the most attractive, even in through this particular form or conception that it's not so, you know, appealing to us. So that's what Krishna is. Something that we think it's the most worst, Krishna will appear as, even through such kind of a conception, and present it as something the most wonderful and most beautiful and most attractive. That is Krishna. And that only Krishna can do. Nobody else can do it. Nobody can assume form that kind of a form. That only Krishna can do. And therefore he expands in all these different kinds of incarnation, different kinds of forms. But interesting thing is one thing about, a little bit more about that Shesha form. Even as I said, cross-cultural study a little bit worldwide, if you point out that there was a lot of snake worship going on also in ancient times throughout the world as well. You will find in Central America, you will find in all these different nations or people that lived at Mayas, Aztecs, Toltecs, whatever, so many different Incas. They all also have a conception of the god, which is winged snake. So they worship God as a snake, huge serpent as well, many hooded as well. Of course, sometimes we have to be careful that we don't mistake, like even here in India, even in the Vedas, it has been mentioned that different kinds of Nagas are there. Nagas are also worshipped for different kinds of purposes, and they can assume also human-like forms, like Arjuna married Ulupi, she was a Naga princess. And they were also worshipped in this particular kind of snake-like form, and they have snake kind of bodies. But also there is that form of Ananta, of Ashesha, which as we are talking here about, it holds the universe. It's the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's a whole different form. And this kind of form also has been worshipped throughout the world. And you will find, even on Roman coins, you will find winged snake. You will find in the Egyptian religion, in Heliopolitan religion, that means Greek religion. You will find in Judaism, you will find all these different conceptions of the snake. And most often they were having a very positive place in the minds of the people. Not the negative place which came on later with a particular interpretation of Christianity. I'm just trying to relate a little bit. I won't go too much deep into it, but I'll just mention here. Because usually that negative connotation always comes, you know, from that particular, one particular instance that happened with the apple. Anyway, so that is there. But the conception of the snake was very positive, and there was a god, even in Egyptian religion and Judaism, that was worshipped as a serapis in a snake form. That's an antashesha. And there was another form which was related to healing and something very good, something very positive. And that's Asclepius and his staff. Even nowadays, anybody here? Medical profession? Anybody studied something? Huh? Hemagiri. Where is Hemagiri? It's not translating today. Okay, anyway. So you will find that there is a staff with the intertwined winged snakes. Even nowadays they use it. They have no idea what it means. Yeah, in homeopathy and all the other, everywhere, even in allopathy also. They're winged snakes. You know, what is the bad snake doing? You know, we're supposed to get cured and stuff. It has a very positive connotation there. Because in ancient times, even Greeks, as I said, Egyptians and Jews, they worshipped Asclepius. That was a particular form of God, again, which was related directly to healing propensities. and herbs and everything else related to medicine. So there was very, very positive. Similarly, like here, Anantashesha or even Charaka, that particular form which we have in the Vedas, was worshipped in such kind of a snake-like form with the hoods, many-hooded form. So snake, you will find, even if you study a little bit history, you will find that many heroes hold a snake under their feet as a sign of conquering that particular power of the snake. And snake also serves as somebody who protects and grants victory over the enemies. So there were a lot of positive conceptions as well. It's not just all negative about, like I said, you know, usually that we have impression of it, snake as being, or serpent being something very negative. It is our material experience, yes, but the divine transcendental experience is that even such kind of a snake, like we are relating here to Anantashesha, holds very, very positive position in the ideas of those who practice spiritual life. Another interesting thing is that those two winged snakes, or even that they don't have to be winged, are presenting two types of energies, feminine and masculine energy, that through the meditation of yoga, they're called Ida and Pingala. They're also intertwined through the spine, which is again like a staff or a tree of life. That's another thing that's also represented throughout the whole world and has that idea of harmony, knowledge, and something very, very positive. So those two energies are also intertwined, and they're used, this is in all Gnosticism, one particular type of early Christianity in the that has been presented, that those particular energies are there to be elevated, because everybody has that energy within the body. And especially if it's used in a spiritual way, that's very much relevant to us also as we practice celibacy, brahmacharya life, and also even for the grihasthas in that sense. That particular energy, the whole idea is to be elevated, and it's represented in such a positive manner. So those who utilize it in a positive way, they achieve spiritual perfection. But those who misuse it and utilize it in a very negative way, you know, they develop all different kinds of anarthas and become more and more bound to this material world. So this is what those snakes as an energies represent. And they have to be dealt appropriately in terms of spiritual elevation, not in terms of material degradation. So that kind of energy is very creative. Whereas if it's misused, that same energy that we have, it's very destroying, it's very degrading, it's very destructive. So this is something that is also very interesting, that is related to that positive aspect of that serpent-like feature, especially of the Lord, as we are hearing here about Anantashesha also. So it's not also, definitely, as we say here from our point of view, it's very easy to understand that the Krishna in the form of Anantashesha has all the positive, you know, everything, all the positive qualities are there, because he is Krishna himself. So there is nothing absolutely negative about it. So this is that Anantashesha, or the form of the Lord. He can expand, as we said, he can appear in any form he likes, because everything ultimately emanates from him. But this is, you know, not the experience that actually we have here in the material world. So very interesting, here in the purport itself, as we said, Lord Shiva is praising Anantashesha. There are many things here in the purport maybe we can point out, but because the time is less, we won't go into it. But it's interesting that Lord Shiva is pointing out that all the sages, like we know, are accepting Lord as the source of creation, maintenance and destruction. And we know, I won't go into details again, we know that very often many sages are confused by the Puranic descriptions, who is Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is not. But here still Lord Shiva is pointing, many stages still have the definite understanding of who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, and he himself, which is of course clear from Bhagavatam, pointing out that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That it's not Shiva. Usually we'll find sages meeting in Naimisharanya forest and discussing who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The whole story of Bhrigu Muni testing who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead was resulting in that particular misconception, or misunderstanding, or ignorance, who is the Supreme Person. Then Bhrigu Muni went, we know that story, went and he tested who is ultimately, on the behalf of all the sages, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is what Arjuna also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Param Brahma, Param Bhama, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam, Adidevam, Adam Vibhum. Ahustam rishaya sarve na devarshi naradastata asito devalovya sa svam chaiva bravishime. That all the sages, devarshi narada asita devalavyasa, they confirm, they proclaim that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is what Lord Shiva is doing also here as well. So as I said, we may be kind of a confused Lord in a such a form, and if you don't have sufficient knowledge and understanding and practice, definitely it's going to be very confusing, bewildering. But here we understand, we take the authority of the Shastras, we take the authority of those who are spiritually advanced, who have that particular realization, and therefore we apply it also in our life, and then we understand. If we do that, then our life also and understanding will be perfect. And this is very interesting pastime. I need a little help here, but I'll mention it because I just want to hear from you if anybody knows. There was once Srila Prabhupada asked his disciples, he said, how do we know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? How do we know? What is the proof? What is the understanding that we can draw confirming that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Anybody knows that? What did somebody did replied? No, not that. Yeah, okay, that's true. That is there, but related to one that particular part. Maybe. Yeah, that's okay. That's all philosophical. But in one particular instance, related to what I was saying about sages. Okay, we can experience presence of Krishna and His holy name. That was one of the things. But also, Prabhupada, interestingly, he said one thing and then later on he denied that. And then he mentioned another thing. So first one was like that, through that personal experience. Actually, first what happened, that was secondary. First what happened, one devotee said, because Arjuna said. We accept because Arjuna said. We accept because sages said. Asita, Devala, Vyasa, Narada. And then Prabhupada accepted. But then again, same devotee, he asked the same question. And then he said, no. And then devotees were confused, what's going on now? How is it now? It's not. Then he said, no, through personal experience also. Of course, Prabhupada accepted that previous version as well. But just to go a little deeper, just to dig up a little deeper. It's also through personal experience. So this is what Lord Shiva is here describing, this unlimited, ananta, very powerful, filled with all the opulences, incarnation of the Lord that holds the universe on His hoods. And of course, arranging all the different kinds of paraphernalia that is required for Krishna to perform different kinds of pastimes. So this is that manifestation of Ananta. So I will stop here. Actually, I won't stop here. I'll just tell one more little story. Stop here in regards to this verse today. We'll just mention a little bit about Ishwarapuri, because it's just quickly, because it's his disappearance day today. There's not very much in the Shastras given and described about his life, but he appeared in West Bengal, and he was a very exalted personality. He was actually foremost disciple of Madhavendra Puri, and he was always very humble. And at one point he arrived at Navadvip and he was staying in the house of Gopinath Acharya during the time when Nimai Pandit was there still learning, studying the Shastras in the school. And he was unrecognized by anyone. He was just absorbed in devotional mellows of service to Lord Krishna in that particular place. And then somehow he was still wandering a little bit throughout Navadvipa, and he came once next to the house of Advaita Acharya, and seeing Advaita Acharya worshipping Krishna, he just sat on the side a little distance away, and he was just absorbed in that devotional reciprocation between Advaita Acharya and his worshipable deity. But Advaita Acharya was somehow being drawn towards Ishwarapuri, feeling that spiritual potency. And every time, again and again, he would look backwards, looking at Ishwarapuri, because it was so brilliant, so effulgent, so pure. And he understood that something is going on, this person is not an ordinary person. And then after he completed his worship, he asked him, who are you? You know, you must be some kind of saintly personality, you must be a great Vaishnava. And Ishwarapuri said, no, being a humble devotee, he said, no, I'm just no one, I'm just Shudra, and I just came here to take the blessings of your lotus feet. But there was Mukunda Datta. And again, like in case of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, Mukunda Datta has a method to test who is who. So what did he do? He chanted some verses from Bhagavatam and started nice, beautiful kirtan, melodious kirtan. And then immediately Ishwarapurti melted and exhibited all the ecstatic symptoms. And they could understand, wow, this must be very, very exalted Vaishnav Sanyasi. So then Ishwarapuri stayed in Avadhi for some time, and then while once wandering he came across Nimai Pandit and his disciples. And he inquired from his disciples that who is this personality? Of course Nimai Pandit offered his obeisances. And they said, he is a great, great Pandit. And Ishwarapuri was pleased to hear, oh, I have met the great Pandit of Navadvip. And he could see actually this Nimai Pandit was the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the qualities and appearance and everything of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offered his obeisances and invited Ishwarapuri to come to his house for lunch. And this also happened, and I'm just cutting things a little short here. Quickly. So Ishwarapuri came, he was served all these different preparations, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would personally serve him and take remnants, maprasadam afterwards. And this is how he was also blessed. Actually, both were blessed, in other sense. And Ishwarapuri stayed in Avadvip as such for several months in the house of Advaitacharya. And then he was traveling all over to different kinds of holy places. And once, actually, he asked. That was after. Okay, we'll go a little bit more chronologically here. So, once while performing Pinda, or the Shraddha ceremony for his father, deceased father, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Gaya. And in Gaya, there are various places where you do Pinda. You can do it on the Phalgu River, which is underwater, you know, it's flowing there. It appears like nothing is there, but if you dig a little bit, the water will come. You can do there. There are several spots. When this is done, that there is one little bit Bhutashila, that's one hill a little bit further away from Gaya, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also performed. So he performed Pinda at various places. And final place where he performed was at the temple where Lord Vishnu's feet are installed, where Lord Vishnu appeared. In his lotus feet are there worshipped. So there he met Ishwarapuri. And he was so happy, he was so glad. He was in complete ecstasy. And then Ishwarapuri as well also. And then during that night, Ishwarapuri had a dream, definitely revealing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he related that dream to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the next day. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested Ishwarapuri to accept him as his disciple. And this is where actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu received initiation from the Ishwarapuri. So later on again, Ishwarapuri came to Navadvip and when all these different pastimes were performed, I'm just cutting it down now, quickly. And he asked, he had one book from which he was teaching Gadadhar Pandit, Shri Krishna Lilamrita. And he asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you're a Pandit, so please point out some mistakes. Can you correct maybe if there are some grammatical incorrections within that book? But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, how can there be any imperfections in a revelation practically or realizations of the exalted personality like Lu? If anybody finds any mistake in this particular book, then he is the most sinful wretch. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't even look for any mistakes, because that book was perfect. He accepted this as such. So later on, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas and he went to Puri, and Ishwarapuri, just before he departed from this world, he instructed two of his disciples, Kashishwar and Govinda, to come and serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Puri. And we know there are a few leelas with Govinda. And this is how Ishwarapuri then left this world when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was still in the Puri. So a little bit about his glories. Ishwarapuri ki jai. Okay, we'll stop here. Time is out. Are any questions quickly? Maybe one question. Okay. Joshi Prabhu.
We can consider Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he says that you are all my part and parcel. No other demigods can say or have said that you are my part and parcel.
What? I'm sorry.
We are part and parcel of Krishna.
Okay.
Which is said expressly by Lord Krishna.
Okay.
But no other demigod, including Shiva, has said that all mankind is part and parcel of me.
They didn't say that we are part and partial of Krishna?
No other god can say like that.
Aha, okay, that's common.
So that proves that Lord Krishna is the Supreme.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.